the whole 6010. Hello and welcome into the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. Today is Friday, August 12th. My name is Daniel Dopp. I am joined by Field Yates and Stefania Bell. Guys, it is so great to see you today.
It's great to be on the show with you, Daniel.
It is so great to be here today.
First time for the three of us in a while.
I know, exactly. Yeah. Back That's together.
Right. Did I already say today's show is brought to you by Geico?
Nope. Tell us about it, though.
Say it
see
again.
All the ways that you could save by switching to Geico. We're going to do double trouble today. Mm-hmm. We are talking about Seahawks and Rams. We are excited about it. But guys, I just want to jump in. We could do a little bit of, like Stefania, you said, and I'm excited. This is 8-8 week. I didn't even realize. Jeff Fisher week.
It is
the whole
indeed.
Week we had Jeff Fisher week. We never even brought it up. Mm. I'm so glad
you're
here.
That's why you needed me back.
That's why we needed you. Please don't ever go away for that long again. Please.
I'll try.
Matthew's not here anymore. You don't need to leave for that long. It's just Field and I.
Wow. Come on. He raises a good point.
It's still boondoggling, though.
Although Punta Cana was pretty nice, right? Like,
I know. Houston, Punta Cana. Kind of the same.
So close.
Probably, you could probably get direct flight from one to the other, at least, right?
I know. I should have taken that flight instead of coming back here.
Yeah.
I know.
Let's talk. We're going to jump into a bunch of stuff today. Going to have a lot of fun. But preseason happened last night. We had some, quote unquote, actual football that we got to watch. Field. Other than wide receivers that we aren't talking about named Tyquan Thornton, is there anybody else you want to talk about from this game?
All right, so quickly, I'll just say that I think there is a little bit of a fool's errand drawing too much from a preseason game, especially when it's the first one for all four teams we saw last night. So while there are things that caught my eye or that I made note of, I'm not drawing any vast conclusions. If it's okay, I'm just going to summarize because there are only four teams, just like maybe a notable thing that we saw last night from those four teams.
Sure.
Patriots and Giants played. The Patriots, we saw Tyquan Thornton, a second-round rookie who has been generating a lot of buzz in training camp. He caught a touchdown pass, seemed to look the part. Also notable, though, that he was really the only Patriots skill player that we've been talking about that was out there on the field last night. So he might still be a guy that is a year away from being a real fantasy contributor. For the Giants, we actually did see their starters. We saw Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones and Kenny Galladay. It actually seemed like, and I'd have to check the snap counts here, felt like Kenny Galladay was playing more than the rest of those guys that I was referencing, Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley. Don't have any major conclusions. I just have a hope, which is that Saquon Barkley stays healthy and is utilized a lot in the passing game.
Yep.
Did have a catch last night. And just a reminder, if he stays healthy and he is used effectively, his talent is absolutely undeniable. Ravens also played the Titans. The Ravens have now won 21 straight preseason games. Takeaways from the Ravens. It's ridiculous,
I know, it's
right?
It's so funny. It's the least significant yet very important stat that we must repeat every
of
year.
Of course. I'm sure our buddy Doug Kazarian's made a lot of money in Vegas those Ravens preseason bets. But Isaiah Likely was probably the name that caught the most attention from the Ravens last night. He's a tight end, a fourth-round pick, a small school player with a very good athletic profile. Seemed to look the part last night. Unfortunately,
no,
for our
he's
purposes,
not replacing Mark Andrews.
Say, like, he's got a ways to go before he works his way up the depth chart behind not just Mark Andrews, but Nick Boyle, a very good blocking tight end. And then lastly, for Tennessee, you know, Malik Willis had a few plays that really caught all of our attention and all of our eyes. This is still very much Ryan Tannehill's job out of the gates. And I think it's worth noting that Malik Willis, if he plays sooner than later, one thing that's not going to bother us is he can make some mistakes and do some things a little bit unconventional. There's, you know, people are always going to harp on some of his footwork and like at the back end of his throws. If you can throw the ball a mile like he did last night and you can run effectively, you can score a lot of fantasy points. So I think he's probably at least a year away from being a starter in the NFL, maybe longer. But you could see the athletic profile for him as well. And that was good to see for Tennessee.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Not that we don't want to take too much away from preseason, but we're going to leave it there. We got so much more coming up this weekend, too, to be able to dive into, which I'm really excited about.
Tonight, that's right.
Oh, yeah. 16 snaps, by the way, for Kenny Galladay last night. And, you know, he's a really interesting one. Kyle sent that along. You know, Kenny Galladay, at some point, you know, you become, as far as the team is concerned, you may become a sunk cost, right? And I wonder what Kenny Galladay's future looks like for the New York Giants. When he left Detroit, Daniel, you know this, was not the kind of guy that was going to consistently beat you with route running or speed. And if the size and physicality, if those strengths start to weaken a little bit, all of a sudden that $18 million salary is going to look quite bloated. And I didn't see anything from Kenny Galladay last night that had me thinking like the rejuvenation is coming back. We'll see. But Kenny Golladay, definitely a player to watch over these next few preseason games.
Definitely.
Because it feels like there could clearly be other Giants wide receivers that have a lot more value.
Yeah.
And just to add on to that, you know, Kadarius Toney, the injury risk is very real with him.
Last night, got scratched.
Exactly. Yep. So I think that's something to just be mindful of as you head into your fantasy drafts.
All right. Best team names and game updates are out now. We have so many things, guys, that we want to tell you about quickly before we get into things. A pair of articles went up today that we are really excited about.
Yeah,
a bunch
really
of
good
team names. Our game also underwent a glow up this offseason and is fresh with a whole bunch of new features. So make sure to check all of that out before you lock in your league settings. Also, check out DJ Gallo's new team name piece. Everyone knows that
so good.
Every good fantasy season begins with naming your team. DJ Gallo is great at it.
Yeah,
like
he's
if
so
you,
good.
It is so fantastic. He's super creative. So definitely go check that out right now, available on ESPN.com. And do us a favor. Leave some of your favorite team names in the YouTube chat. Please make it so that we can read them at the end of the show, though. Please don't put in stuff we can't read. And we'd love to share some of your favorite team names at the end of the show as well when we go through some of DJ's. All right. Without further ado, it is now time for Seahawks Rams.
Double trouble.
As of this moment, they're on double secret probation.
Tell you what, that team on the left there that we're looking at, the Rams, have a lot of potential fantasy options. Seahawks, we'll get into a little bit later and see how
nice
that goes.
Nice way of putting it. Yeah.
But let's start with the Rams. Matthew Stafford coming off of a Super Bowl. You guys remember that? Matthew Stafford, Super Bowl winning
sure
quarterback?
Do, Daniel, yeah.
No.
He had Stefania. He had 8 games with over 20 fantasy points last year. He also had 9 games with 3 or more touchdowns. That was most in the NFL for quarterbacks. Coming off of a Super Bowl, adding Allen Robinson, still has Cooper Kupp. Does Matthew Stafford have the ability to be a top 10 quarterback this season? Are you ranking him there as a QB1?
All right, so before I give you my analysis, I want to touch base with Stefania, because as of right now, and it's August 12th, there's been a lot of talk about his elbow and whether this abnormal pain, as Sean McVay described it, is cause for concern or not. What do you say?
I say that I'm not overly concerned.
Okay.
And here's why. This has been something that's been going on since last year in the preseason. He had an injection. Nobody really talked about it at the time, but that's why he wasn't doing any throwing in OTAs. It is a structured return to throwing program. And we'd mentioned this a little bit yesterday, but I think Sean McVay got in trouble trying to describe it and basically make it easier for fans to appreciate what Stafford is going through. But sometimes the wording will leave people a little bit
abnormal is a big
more
word.
Terrified. And abnormal is one of those words that you don't want to say. But it's more common in baseball throwers, right? And we see when they talk about thrower's elbow, which is essentially what they referenced, it's typically flexor tendon issues, which is like the inside of your elbow here, right? It's right where the flexor tendon
right
attaches.
In here, Phil.
Right. Yeah.
Do you want to?
Right there. Yeah.
Somewhere in there.
So, in any case, you do an injection. It's not cortisone because you don't want to damage the tendon. It's like PRP mix. But after that, you have to give an adequate rest time. Think about pitchers. You hear about them getting an injection and they don't throw for 6 weeks, 8 weeks. So that he starts returning to throwing right when camp comes back. So while he's over here doing his throwing program, everybody else is over here working on team drills and people are like, hey, what's going on? And that's what started all the chatter. He's on track now, throwing really well, not having much discomfort. Mm-hmm. I do expect him to be fine for week 1. Could it crop up during the season? Sure. Yeah. That's the unknown. But I expect him to be ready.
All right. So using that last line first, that it could have cropped back up in the season, that's what we don't know. Here's what I would say about that is as far as what it means for his fantasy ranking, I've got him at the back end of my second tier of quarterbacks. I currently have him quarterback 11 on my board. And I sort of view quarterbacks 4 through 11, 5 through 11, 6 through 11 is sort of like that second tier of guys that no problem walking away from your draft with them as your QB1. But if you're staring at the possibility of drafting a Dak Prescott or a Joe Burrow or Russell Wilson or Matthew Stafford, any of those guys vis-a-vis Stafford, then I would feel comfortable taking any of those players over Stafford because of the possibility that he has to either manage this injury or maybe at some point causes him to miss some period of time. That's how I am applying the news from Stefania there. But The reason why you also feel really good about Matthew Stafford, and Daniel, you kind of got down this path, is that he had 8 games with 20 or more fantasy points last season.
Yep.
He had 41 passing touchdowns, right near the top of the NFL leaderboard. One of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. He is super talented. He had 7 games with 300-plus passing yards. He's got elite weapons around him. The best receiver, at least last year in football, in Cooper Kupp. An offensive system that we know is going to be good. They have consistently ranked near the top of total points scored since Sean McVay became the head coach. There are going to be lots of weeks where they are scoring 30-plus points. He had 13 games last year with at least 2 passing touchdowns. He had 8 games inside the top 10, and he had 1 dud game all year. 1 game last season where he was not a top 20 quarterback. You got great consistency from Matthew Stafford. He does not add anything with his legs whatsoever. So he is in that category of quarterbacks that are elite distributors. We talk about the Bradys and the Burrows and the, to a degree, Aaron Rodgers, even though he is a decent scrambler, like that's the kind of class that he is in right now for quarterbacks, but he's good enough and the offense is good enough that he can certainly be a top 10 quarterback with just a couple of things breaking in his favor this year. He was top 6 last season.
Yeah, you look at, this is one of those quarterbacks that I think if you wait, you decide you don't want to take a quarterback early, you want to play the value game. Matthew Stafford is absolutely a guy that you can target in the later rounds of your draft. But like you said, Field doesn't utilize his legs at all. So that's not a thing that you're looking at, Stefania. And that's one of the, that's one of the situations when you draft a quarterback late, very likely it's because of a situation like that. You might be able to get Matthew Stafford here. You're looking next to Russell Wilson and Trey Lance, two guys who do utilize their legs a fair amount.
Yeah, and I probably, that would tip the scale a little bit for me. Like, there's a couple changes on the offensive line. Andrew Whitworth retiring. We know that Matthew Stafford has struggled when there's been not as good protection. I still think they're solid, but just not what they were before. Sure. I think that's where his timing with his receivers comes into play. He and Cooper Kupp are like a mind meld. Allen Robinson has talked about kind of getting in the mix with that. So, look, I think solid, but there are concerns.
Sure. I like him, but just a funny stat. When was the last time Matthew Stafford rushed for a touchdown?
Detroit, probably 2018.
2017 has
been 5 years
since he had a touchdown on the ground, which is just sort of hard. Like, that's almost hard to do if you play
almost
quarterback.
Hard to do for how he's played so many games. That's really hard to do.
Yeah, I just mean, like, you know, you figure a quarterback sneak here or there, maybe like a play at the goal line where things just break down in coverage and he just jogs in.
Just doesn't do it.
And the Rams running backs only had 10 rushing touchdowns last year. I'm surprised he didn't get one. But on that note, let's talk about Rams running backs, because Stefania, we saw Cam Akers got hurt last year, but ended up coming back at the end of the season, had a part of his playoff run. Do you think you were encouraged by Cam Akers being able to come back at the end of the season? Or do you feel like once you were able to see him come back, there was more discouragement around how he performed once he was back?
Yeah, I'd tip it toward the encouraged by coming back last season. Remember, he just tore his Achilles in July of last year. So when he came back, it was like less than 6 months, and he had this amazing return to play. But I think they knew what they were getting. And while everyone hyped up how great he looked, because he did look good for being relatively short out, everybody talks to a player about explosion and power being the last thing to come back. And we didn't really see it from him.
Yeah.
You add on all the time of the offseason, the additional conditioning. And if you look at what he's been doing in training camp and the praise he's been getting from Sean McVay and the confidence level, again, confidence post these big injuries is a big deal. He's going to come in better this season than what you saw in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think there are only two arguments against Cam Akers, and Stefania just basically put one of them to bed. One would be, hey, he didn't look that great last year. Maybe he's going to have some residual impact from that Achilles. Sounds like that's probably not going to be the case. Yep. So he's healthy coming into this season. The other counterpoint is, well, he plays with Daryl Henderson, and this could be a committee. Sean McVay, as we discussed in a previous show, referred to this as, we have two starting running backs. Well, Sean McVay has been the head coach for the Rams for 5 seasons prior to that. In 4 of those 5 seasons, the lead running back has had at least 200 carries. So that's a decent number. You know, obviously, they started playing 17 games. But if you do the math in years prior to that, in a 16-game season, you're talking about, what is that, like, you know, 13.5-plus carries per game at minimum. The only exception to that 4 out of 5 was that Cam Akers in 2020 was a rookie. Remember, he came on late after getting banged up.
Yep.
And he was the guy that became the guy. But Sean McVay has largely preferred to have a guy as his go-to in the backfield. We saw it last year with Sony Michel for spurts and Daryl Henderson for spurts. If Cam Akers stays healthy, and he has had multiple injuries in his career, I understand that. But he is coming into this season at full strength. I think Sean McVay will plan to ride him. He had 66% of the touches last season during the playoffs when he was 5 months removed from a popped Achilles. That takes most guys like a year to come back from. Sean McVay loves Cam Akers. And we saw how good he was at the end of 2020 when he had 6 games that he played. He had 22 carries per game. He had 23.8 touches per game. He had over 100 yards in 2 of those 6 games. He scored a ton of touchdowns. He scored touchdowns during that time as well. To me, the upside is very obvious here with Cam Akers. It's why I previously referred to him as my breakout running back for this season.
Yeah, the other thing to add to why I'm more encouraged is a big thing for players getting back on the field after a big injury like that. He's already done that. That's right out of the way. And the I think that feeds into why Sean McVay is saying he looks more and more comfortable because now he's focused on football. Remember, he had no training camp last year. All of that stuff matters. And as he's getting these reps, that's helping build the endurance for the football season.
100% agree. I'm excited about him. And Daryl Henderson would obviously have value if something happens with Cam Akers. And sure, I'm not entirely dismissing the idea that he's going to have a role. He will have a weekly role. My guess going into the season, though, is that over the course of a prolonged stretch, it's going to lean heavily in the favor of Cam Akers. Certainly, Henderson, a very valuable insurance policy. And as we saw last year, he'd be a top 15-ish play if he is the lead guy in this Rams offense.
Absolutely. All right, let's talk about some wide receivers here, Field, because last year, Cooper Kupp scored the most fantasy points ever by a wide receiver in a single season. He had more fantasy points than anybody else in fantasy. You've talked about it earlier, but why is Cooper Kupp not the number one player drafted in fantasy football this year?
Okay, so let's do the positive stuff before we get into why you would not take him number one overall. And people were going to say, well, of course he had the most fantasy points ever. It was a 17-game season. He's got the advantage over the historic Jerry Rice or Randy Moss seasons. He also averaged more fantasy points per game than any wide receiver who actually played close to a full season ever last year. 25.9 fantasy points per game. He had at least 7 targets in every single game. He led the NFL in catches and yards and receiving touchdowns and 20-plus yard receptions. This is not some guy that lives and feasts off of like 10 or 12-yard completions. This guy does damage as a runner after the catch. He's good down the field. He's good everywhere. He's good in the red zone, perhaps one of the best red zone receivers in the NFL. And I get it. It was a breakout year, and it's really hard to repeat the historical success. He could have a discounted season compared to last year and still easily be wide receiver one for this upcoming season. Beyond that, like, it's a second year with Matthew Stafford. That rapport that was basically lights out last year could get even better. And I think something that's underrated with Cooper Kupp, and I'm not saying this persuades me entirely on other players that play on the perimeter, but he's not a perimeter receiver. Right. He's a slot receiver. You know why that matters? Every Thursday, Mike Clay does a wide receiver cornerback matchup article. When was the last time he brought up Cooper Kupp as having a negative matchup? He's never going to. I talked about this with Mike last night over text, and he was like, if it happens, it's extremely rare. You don't have to worry about Cooper Kupp lining up opposite of J.C. Jackson or whoever the best cornerback on their roster of the opponent is every single week. Cooper Kupp should be money in the bank.
Okay, so then why are you taking him first overall?
Yeah, and that's
I just want to point out that you and Mike, this is what you text about when you're not here.
Yeah, at night.
Like Cooper pretty Kupp.
Much. And dad jokes. That's about it. Yeah, pretty much. You know, but Mike, it's great. It's great reinforcement, though, that, like, you know, what if the opponent, any number of factors we can use to make the case for Cooper Kupp is good by me.
Also, by the way, last year when, you know, after Odell went down in the Super Bowl, like, everyone knew Matthew Stafford's going to Cooper Kupp, and he still makes the plays. Yeah. Like, it does not matter if they know and they're trying to crowd him. He still makes the plays. I don't know anyone else like that.
And I think the big part about playing in the slot is that when they try to crowd you in the slot, it creates traffic jams. Yeah. There's so much more going on in the middle of the field that if you've got a cornerback and a safety who are bracketing Cooper Kupp in the slot in every single play, the Rams are just going to do this. And if you're not watching the stream, I'm taking my two hands and I'm crossing them from each other because Cooper Kupp runs left. The guys on the opposite side of the line of scrimmage runs right. And next thing you know, it becomes literally a traffic jam. It's like a basketball player setting a pick for his teammate. And in this case, it will be legal for football. And so it's just hard to triple team or double team guys in the slot, harder than it is for perimeter receivers. Only underscores the case for Cooper Kupp. The case against him being number one overall, Daniel, is pretty standard and pretty simple. In my opinion, it's that, you know, wide receivers are just inherently slightly less valuable than running backs. If you go through the players that you feel totally fully 100% confident in as running backs versus those that you feel wide receiver. I'd imagine most people have a much shorter list at running back. And, you know, Cooper Kupp could have a tiny bit of drop off and be below that threshold that I mentioned of 25.9 fantasy points per game. If Christian McCaffrey is just himself, his average over the past four seasons is 25 plus fantasy points per game. So the standard of a healthy Christian McCaffrey is the same zip code as a Cooper Kupp. If he depreciates by 15% and he's at more like 22 points per game, then you'd be below McCaffrey. But mostly it just comes down to the fact that running backs are harder to find than wide receivers. Right. If you take Cooper Kupp one, go for it.
I'm it's okay a with draft it. Capital you're expending. Yeah. If you take, if you're number one, you take Cooper Kupp, you have to wait until you wrap completely back around to get a running back. And by then, that top tier of running backs is going to be vacated.
Yeah, and I'll just say this is like, I have... If people want to take Justin Jefferson or Ja'Marr Chase first amongst wide receivers, I'm not going to scoff at you. I think you've got three players that all have really great cases for being the number one wideouts based off of age, talent, ability, usage, etc. I have Cooper Kupp number one. I think if you can get him anywhere from picks, like I think anywhere from pick, my preference would be like 4 to 7 would be the right range for Kupp. But I expect to see him going 1 or 2 in a lot of drafts that I do.
4 meaning you got JT, CMC, and Austin Eckler above him.
Those are the three players I have above him. But that's, again, a running back thing as well.
Totally. Totally. What about his, he just, Allen Robinson just joined the team. We looked at Allen Robinson last year. Was really tough on that Chicago team.
He's only 28.
He's younger than Cooper Kupp.
Which is crazy.
Younger than Cooper Kupp.
But he feels older because he's had a lot of rough years.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about the so last year he was hurt. He's been a guy that's dealt with a major injury and a torn ACL Stefania, but he's also been a guy that Fantasy Football Now has gotten some real estate out of because it's, say, Stefania, Allen Robinson's nursing a quad injury. Good to go, yes or no?
Well, I think also because he was so necessary in that offense because he was the best player and he was trying to play through things. So the year after ACL injury, it's not uncommon for guys to have soft tissue injuries. We see it all the time, hamstring, groin, quad. And that happened for Allen Robinson. I think that was the toughest year, was that first year back. And other things, he's sort of been beat up a little bit, but he's always played through them. And he's actually still been pretty effective when he has. So he's now with one of the best medical staffs in the league with the Rams. So that's a plus. He is, you know, I was watching some clips of him talking to reporters through camp about things he's learned and things he's picked up. And he's taking tips from Cooper Kupp and he's talking with Matthew Stafford. And you can just see it in his energy that he feels like he's like, it's a winning culture. I thought, you know, that's what he said right out of the gate. And I think that he feels re-energized and revitalized by being with this club.
It was the first time he's ever played on a winning team. No offense to Jacksonville or Chicago, but like coming here, I mean, it's not
offense. It's just a fact.
It's just a fact. And he's going to have the best quarterback that he's ever played with. And with that field, given all of everything that Stefania just said, when you're looking at Allen Robinson from a fantasy perspective this year, how are you breaking down where you're going to draft him?
You got to measure two things here. And let's start with the positive, because you want to be positive on a player that we all like a lot, has been a fantasy stalwart with far inferior quarterback play around him. But he's playing with, as you just mentioned, by far the best quarterback he's ever played with.
Yep.
The Rams had the second most passing touchdowns as a team in the NFL last year. They scored the 6th most points per game in the NFL last season. Those are all good things, right? Coming from an offense that was near the bottom in those categories in Chicago. So the best offense he's probably ever played in. He also goes to an offense where wide receivers are used a ton. And as of this conversation, Odell Beckham Jr. is unsigned. Even if he does return to the Rams, he is not going to be available to begin the season. As of this conversation, Van Jefferson is not practicing with the Rams. He's dealing with a knee issue that they're going to continue to monitor. So right now, the window to him being the number two player in this offense amongst wide receivers is very clear. And that matters more than it would in other offenses because the Rams throw the football to their wide receivers more than anybody else in the league. Their wide receivers had a 71% target share last year, number one in the NFL. They get a lot of usage out of these wideouts. Here's what you have to balance it against, is that we've talked about the injuries over the course of his career. Last year, in a season in which we did see Darnell Mooney have an awesome year with the Chicago Bears, even with their quarterback carousel of Nick Foles and Andy Dalton and also Justin Fields, Allen Robinson was not good last year. He had 0 games, at least 100 receiving yards. He had 1 total touchdown. He had a career low 10.8 yards per catch. So the evaluation on Allen Robinson probably comes down to this. What do you believe is the real Allen Robinson? If you believe that he's the player that got a $15.5 million per year contract from the Rams, you probably should be relatively optimistic that he can be a top 30 wideout. If you think that Allen Robinson could be a player who's past his prime and might salvage things a little bit because he's playing in a really good offense, then you may want to fade him. I've sort of split the atom, and I've kind of met in the middle. I have him right around wide receiver 30. As a matter of fact, I have him as, let me get this, 35, excuse me. So a little bit behind ESPN consensus. The industry is all over the place with Allen Robinson, but you have to make a decision. I think he's a good player, so I do think that, like, as we get closer and closer to the season, as I kind of crunch my rankings one more time, I might move him up a little bit because I do believe in this Rams offense and the infrastructure and the smart people and the good quarterback. But I'm not ruling out the possibility that part of the reason why he struggled last year is that, kind of like with Kenny Golladay, he just isn't the player he was early in his career. A really good player with some risk.
I'm less concerned about the risk with him. I think you're going to see a big difference in Allen Robinson in LA.
I'm excited because, like you said, Field, the industry is all over the place on Allen Robinson with what you like right now. And if he does turn into that player, he's great value with where you're getting right now at wide receiver 35.
I think this is the best way I can describe it, is that at a $15.5 million per year salary, by the end of this season, Allen Robinson will either be one of the best bargains in the NFL at wide receiver or one of the biggest busts amongst wide receivers in terms of pay this year. I can't imagine that he's somewhere in between. I know that world exists, but like, if he has 35 catches for 520 yards and 2 touchdowns this year, and you're paying him $15.5 million,
not cutting it.
There are other allocations of resources.
That. Yeah.
Yep. Mark my words.
Caesars has the Rams at 10.5 wins. Stefania, you taking the over or under on 10.5?
I was looking at that. I think I'm going to go slightly under. And part of it is that they have some difficult, they're playing the AFC West.
Sure.
They got Buffalo in the home opener, which I think that they, or I don't know if it's home, but they have Buffalo in the opener. Can't remember where they play it. But
game is in Los Angeles. Yep.
Okay. So,
Okay. Taking the
It's under. Not snowing in Buffalo I think just given, and then they're going to lose to the 49ers twice. So, by the time you factor it all in, I'm going slightly under.
Head versus heart. I'm going to go the over here. I think I've been relatively optimistic on most of the teams that we've had the chance to preview so far, but I'm going with the over here. But the bar is almost set with them for about 10 wins with good quarterback play and Sean McVay as their coach. That's the minimum, right? So I think that they'll head over that. And, the toughest challenge I always remark on Super Bowl champions that are doing it for the first time in a while is just the idea that you're no longer the hunter, you're the hunted, right? Mm-hmm. And every single week you get a big bullseye on your back. I think the Rams handle it well enough that they end up winning more than 10.5 games this year.
I can't wait.
I'm going to take the over. Matthew Stafford's coming back stronger than ever. Come on.
I got to start to pick my spots here and go under. I think I'm over on we've probably done, 8 teams?
Over is more fun. Over is way more fun than under. Yeah. That's why.
Now, when you're
always bet the over.
Yeah. No.
All right.
Shout out to our guy, Big Cat. I can't wait. We're going to talk about this later in the year. I'm under on the Rams.
We're going to talk about the Seahawks here in just a minute, but first, a word from Field about Geico.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance?
Of course
you would. After all, who doesn't love a great deal, right? And when it comes to great rates on insurance for all the things in your life, Geico can help. Like with insurance for Stefania's new car, truck, Daniel's new motorcycle, a boat, even an RV.
Yeah.
Fields.
My new Vespa.
Wow.
Even help with homeowners, condos, or renters coverage. You could save even more with a special discount when you bundle your coverages. Plus, add the easy-to-use Geico mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more. And choosing to switch to Geico becomes an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a quote or contact your local agent and get started seeing how much you could save.
Tell you what, if I could go to geico.com and get a goat and a quote, I'd be there today.
A goat and a quote. I was saying they're the goat insurance company.
They're the goat of quotes is what it is.
They're the goat
is what
quotes.
It is. Yeah.
I think Mike Tomlin might be the goat of quotes, but Geico, Dan different Campbell. Kind of quote, right?
Sure. Oh yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Different kind of quotes.
Different kind of quotes. All right, let's talk about the Seattle Seahawks.
Shall we?
Oh, it's going to be less fun than the Rams. All right. Let's start with these. I'm not even going to talk about the quarterbacks. There's no reason to talk about the quarterbacks. You're not drafting Drew Lock or Geno Smith in a 10 to 12 team league. We can talk about how they factor into the wide receivers.
Yeah.
But there's no reason to talk about them from a fantasy perspective.
We talk about this often where it's like, almost any quarterback matters in a 2 quarterback league. If you play in a 10 or 12 team league, I don't think that the Seahawks quarterbacks are going to be a starter coming into week 1. They're going to be rostered because every quarterback is drafted in a 2 quarterback league,
right?
But they will not be a starter in my week 1 rankings. They will be somewhere outside the top 25.
All right. So that means,
and I say they because I think it's Geno Smith, but we don't know as of right now.
Still unsure.
Yep.
So right now we're looking at the running backs trying to figure out how it is that we suss out this backfield because, that's a good word. I'm trying to suss it out.
Yeah.
Because right now we're looking at Rashad Penny. Rashad Penny crushed it over the final five games of last year, weeks 14 to 18. He averaged 22 points per game. That was RB1 over that stretch. Mm-hmm. He had almost 20 touches per game. We saw him look unbelievable, but Stefania, the whole point is Rashad Penny has dealt with injuries his entire NFL career. And then the Seahawks go out and they draft a workhorse in Ken Walker. Yeah. After we just saw everything that Rashad Penny did in those final five games. I'm curious from a... Oh, I said I'm curious again.
He's hurt right now, by the way.
From an injury standpoint, yes.
I'm aware.
How do we set up both of these running backs, understanding there's a committee and a whole lot we've got to figure out, but just from a health perspective first, how are you assessing both of these running backs?
Well, let's talk a little bit. So obviously, retirement of Chris Carson. I think the Seahawks knew Rashad Penny. They don't know if he can carry a full workload because he has yet to play a full slate of games in his career.
Sure.
In 2018, 14 games. In 2019, 10 games. Hamstring injury, then tore his ACL. In 2020, only played 3 games. In 2021, last year, only 10 games. I mean, that... He came on strong at the end, but he injured himself in week 1, had a calf strain, and was placed on injured reserve. So it's, even though he finished well, that is recency there as far as a significant injury. And a lot of those points, when you look at points per game, it's where you have to be careful, because in week 14, 137 rushing yards and 2 TDs. So there was a ton of fantasy points in that 1 week where he really came out. Now, Pete Carroll, ever the optimist, has said he has a slight groin issue.
Oh.
However, I just want to reference Brady Henderson, who covers the Seahawks for us, our NFL Nation reporter. This was his tweet from yesterday. He said, Pete Carroll describing Ken Walker as a 3-down back on the same day that Rashad Penny is sidelined again, this time with groin tightness. Another indication / reminder that Walker is going to play a ton this season. So they've really been talking up Walker. And yeah. I think that's the concern with Rashad Penny, was we saw what he could look like when he was solid, but they are not convinced he can handle a full workload.
Yeah, so are you taking a stand on this backfield given what Stefania just said, Field? Do you have one over the other definitively, or is it still kind of murky?
I will probably end up with Ken Walker ahead of Rashad Penny in my final rankings as we get closer to the peak of draft season for a few reasons. Stefania just mentioned that Rashad Penny is currently hurt. He has missed a lot of games during the course of his career. Unfortunately, there are some guys that are built to last, and there are some guys that just consistently do end up missing time. He has 37 games played in 4 seasons, which means that he has missed 28 games versus playing 37. So he's been a 60-40 shot to be available during the first 5 years of his career. Let's talk through this a little bit further, though. It's not just the injuries that are a concern for Rashad Penny. It's the fact that in 37 career games, he has 23 total catches. 23 catches in 37 games. For better and worse, during that 5-game stretch that you guys were talking about, he became Derrick Henry. The better is obvious, right? He had 130 rushing yards in 4 of those 5 games, and he had 6 rushing touchdowns in those 5 games.
Yep.
Derrick Henry. The worst part of it is that he also had 6 targets in those 5 games. 6 targets in those 5 games means that you are counting on him being basically Derrick Henry again for some period of time in order to get the kind of return that you are looking for to actually justify him being in your lineup. And the problem is that, A, he's not Derrick Henry. B, this team is not good enough to run a Derrick Henry Tennessee Titans style of offense. They're going to be playing from behind a lot. The schedule softened up dramatically for the Seahawks down the stretch last year, and they still had Russell Wilson. If you don't have Russell Wilson and the schedule is tough at the outset, it's going to be hard to run the football as much as we know Pete Carroll loves to run. So that's why you end up, I think, leaning towards the guy that we think has a better chance at a passing game role. And we don't know what Ken Walker's passing game role is going to be. He's a rookie. He did not catch the ball a ton during his time at Wake Forest and then Michigan State. He didn't have to. A lot of guys who become really good pass catchers in the NFL don't catch it that much in college because they're just busy bowling over defenders for 255 yards in a game.
Yep.
So I'm going to end up leaning towards Kenneth Walker for a couple of reasons. He is a very good player. He does, I think, have enough passing game skills to be a contributor in the passing game. And that to this point, and it's unfair because he hasn't actually played in the NFL, but Rashad Penny has been an injury risk. Ken Walker has not been.
Pete Carroll actually talked about the fact that Rashad Penny's lack of development, for a better word, as a pass catcher is tied to the fact that he's missed so much time. Sure. Like, it's been hard for him to consistently get passing work because of the fact he hasn't been available.
And to your point, when you talk about Ken Walker, 1,636 rushing yards, second in FBS last year.
He's also awesome.
Had 18 rushing touchdowns, and the stat that blows me away, 1,001 rushing yards after contact. Last season, 1,000 yards after contact. Dude is, I mean, he's going to bowl over people, but from that standpoint, there's a lot of reasons why to be nervous about Seahawks running backs this year with the way the offense is going to play out, but I'm with you on Ken Walker having a little bit of an edge over Rashad Penny.
Yeah, by the way, I think going into the season, I think the value for Kenneth Walker is a flex play. That's where I have him to begin the season. I have him as a flex type running back, not a RB2 or a must start in a 10 or 12 team league.
All right, so given the concerns that we have, not only with the running backs and how we feel like this team is going to have a negative game script, when you look at the wide receivers, now you've got DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett no longer with Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. It's tough to be able to see with where they're going right now. DK Metcalf is wide receiver 18, currently going in the sixth round. Tyler Lockett, wide receiver 31, going in the ninth round. Do you think the gap between those two, wide receiver 18 and wide receiver 31, is too big between DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett?
I think it's a little too big, but I also think that these two players are really difficult to size up for fantasy going into this season. Let me start with something that I think needs to be said a million times and not be lost in translation. Two truly remarkable, unbelievable, talented wide receivers.
Absolutely.
DK Metcalf is a certified baller. Got a huge contract recently, and I couldn't be happier for him. Tyler Lockett, unbelievable player, has been just so good for so long in the Seattle offense. Four straight dominant years. Had the chance to spend some time with him recently at an event. Couldn't be a nicer human. He was, the way that he interacted with the guests blew me away. And I know that, like, this is not about how the people are as humans, and we were talking about the numbers here, but I'm saying all these nice things about them that includes the personal side, because that part needs to be established. They're awesome at football and at life, right? But for fantasy, it's very complicated when you have a quarterback in whichever option they choose that's not very good. Mm-hmm. But DK Metcalf, over the past three seasons, he's been in the NFL, has 29 receiving touchdowns. That's tied for fifth in the league. That's really good, right? Like, he lives in the end zone. He had a year two seasons ago that was one of the great breakouts in the NFL. He was one of the best receivers in fantasy. He had 83 catches. He had double-digit touchdowns. Total star player. Last year, though, gives you a little bit of discomfort for this reason, is that when DK Metcalf did not score a touchdown in a game, he averaged just 8.82 fantasy points per game. And if you're not confident in this offense, I don't blame you. Drew Lock and Geno Smith have started a combined 55 games in their respective careers.
That's a fair amount.
They have a total of 5 300-yard passing games.
That's not
and
enough.
5 3-touchdown passing games.
Yikes. Are you kidding me? So,
combined. Oh my God.
So you go from Russell Wilson, one of the great players in this league, to two guys who are major question marks, and it's going to be an innate step backwards for this offense. DK did not have a game with 7 catches last year. So here's the reason why DK Metcalf still cracks the top 20 for me. First of all, he's DK Metcalf. He's a great, great end zone threat. We talked all the time last year about how the Seahawks need to get him the ball more consistently. Maybe some self-scouting this offseason, as you are installing new elements into your offense, will make them realize we can't afford to have games where DK catches 2 passes. He needs to catch between 5 and 10 passes every game.
Not with the amount of money they just paid him.
You better pay him. You better use the ball. You give him the ball a whole lot more.
Yeah.
But Matthew used to talk about his chicken players every year.
Mm-hmm.
DK Metcalf is a chicken player for me. Again, that's nothing to do with the player himself. It's that you're nervous that you're drafting him as a top 20 wide receiver, and out of the gates, he could go 4 straight games to begin the season without a touchdown. Now, he could also go 4 straight games with a touchdown. That's what makes him one of those sort of fence-sitting players for me. I like him a lot as a player, obviously, but he does make me a little bit nervous where he is relative to other wide receivers that are in that same neighborhood. Guys like Chris Godwin, who, even though he's coming off an ACL tear, he plays with Tom Brady.
Right.
Right? Like, that's as secure as you could possibly feel about a wideout in the NFL. Even someone like Mike Williams, who I described as a little bit hit or miss earlier on when we did the Chargers double trouble, mm-hmm. he's playing with Justin Herbert, right? Like, I'd rather have a hit or miss with Justin Herbert under center than a hit or miss with Geno Smith under center. So I have DK Metcalf still inside my top 20, just to round it out, but I'm putting it out there, as I talked about him as a potential bust candidate not that long ago on this show, that he does have some elements of his outlook that make me a little bit nervous.
So I hear that, and I want to throw this out there. You know, right, we're talking about this right now. I'm sort of under the assumption that Geno Smith is going to be the quarterback, assuming is very much a guess, though. But last year, we watched DK have some success with Geno Smith under center. And it's not that Tyler Lockett didn't, but Tyler Lockett had 100 routes in 4 games with Geno. He had 27 targets for 17 catches, 196 yards, and no touchdowns over 4 games. So that means he averaged about just over 4 catches and just under 50 yards per game with Geno Smith under center. That's very different than the DK Metcalf that we talked about, because DK Metcalf scored 4 touchdowns in the 4 games that he had with Geno Smith. When you're looking at Tyler Lockett, do you have that same kind of fear that you have with DK? Is that why he's wide receiver 31, because he doesn't have that same upside that DK Metcalf has? Because he's just not that same wide receiver in this offense.
Yeah. I mean, I just have zero confidence in this offense because I don't know what it's going to look like with whoever is throwing the ball to them. And Tyler Lockett, we've talked every year, he was always sort of a feast or famine, right? Yep. Because you would have games where he would have double-digit points, and then you'd have games where he'd sort of disappear. And not on him necessarily, but that's just the way the offense ran for Seattle. Why are we thinking that that would get any better is my question.
All right, so I don't want to pour cold water on what you just said there, Daniel, but it is also worth noting that in those 4 games with Geno Smith, one of those touchdowns was like an 84-yard touchdown in a game in which DK Metcalf had 2 catches.
Okay.
Right? So you got 2 catches. One of them happened to be a gargantuan touchdown that basically won that, that they may have won. As a matter of fact, he did actually win a War Room League for me. It was like, I needed, the funny part was I needed like 17 points and he got 16.4. Or 15.4 on that first
one play.
On that one play. And then he waited like the fourth quarter to get the second catch. Like, I'm just telling you, having lived through it, it wasn't as good as the box score looks. And that game against the Jaguars, the worst team in the league by far last year, he had 43 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Okay.
So, like, there was not. My point is that, like, it was not. You can paint a case that, like, oh, in total points with those 4 games with Geno Smith, he still averaged 15, whatever it was, points per game. It was a tough to achieve 15 points per game. And Tyler Lockett, that's not just illustrative, I think, of Geno Smith. It's illustrative of Tyler Lockett. And the reason why he's going at wide receiver 34 in terms of ADP is not just because of the fact that the quarterback question mark is there. Is that this is Tyler Lockett, right? Amazing player. Over the past 4 seasons, he has 36 receiving touchdowns. That's one of the best in the NFL. Last year, he had 5 games as a top 10 wide receiver. He had 8 games outside of the top 30 at wide receiver. Over the past 4 seasons, he has 13 games total with 6 or more catches. During those same 4 seasons, he has 22 games with 3, 2, 1, or 0 catches.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what you're going to get weekly, and that was when he was playing with Russell Wilson, too.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was saying. Only Field gave you the numbers. But that you get that when you watch it. You see the difference. Mm-hmm. And then, so that was my point, is how do you see that improving with this? You don't.
Yeah, you don't.
Which is why I want really no part of it. I will say this about DK Metcalf. What's interesting is he had a foot injury last year, which he subsequently had a procedure to remove a screw from his foot. But he was not practicing last year. Pete Carroll actually said he only practiced one day a week and did walk through. Yeah. So maybe there's something to be said for, you know, just for him personally being able to be better this year. But in this offense with who knows who at the quarterback.
Yeah.
No, thanks.
Just a final thought on DK, because based off where he's going, like it's a real investment you have to make, a wide receiver 18 or 20, depending on league size and all that, is the path for DK to justifying that price point is not DK himself. He's great. He's a total baller. It's not the quarterback play, because Geno Smith and Drew Lock are what they are. They're not going to turn into overnight sensations. It's on the Seahawks.
They got to get him the ball.
It's do they make a concerted effort to force feed the ball to DK Metcalf? And if they do, he'll be a top 20 wide receiver and you won't have to sweat it. If they don't, it could be a much longer year.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair to say. All right, let's wrap this up with tight ends. They also brought over Noah Fant as a part of that Russell Wilson deal. Noah Fant is a guy that right now I don't view as a top 10 tight end in this offense. Again, given all the things that we just said about the wide receivers, the quarterback play, do you feel any differently about Noah Fant, Field, heading into the season?
I do not. Makes me nervous. I have him outside my top 10. I think I have him at tight end 16 right now, so not particularly optimistic. If you're looking for a reason why he could be a reasonable dart throw, I guess there are two of them. One.
He did it last year with Drew Lock.
Yeah. Well, he has played with Drew Lock, and last year with bad quarterback play, he had six games with at least five catches, so that was good, right?
Yep.
Two, he's never going to be the primary target for a defense. It's always going to be Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf that they worry about first.
Yeah.
Three, if they can create some touches for him, he's good after the catch. Since entering the league 3 seasons ago, if you look at every player that has at least 150 catches, and Noah Fant's one of them, so he's averaging 50-plus catches per year, he's fourth in terms of yards per catch after the catch. So once you get the football, what do you do with it? The three guys ahead of him, you might have heard of them. Deebo Samuel, George Kittle, A.J. Brown. That's the full list. So he's really good with the ball in his hands, but not a great passing offense. Not going to be the number one guy. I've got him as tight end 16 or so on my board. Makes me nervous.
That's fair. All right. We're going to wrap it up and talk about some team names and some more name game stuff potentially here in a minute. But first, when it comes to choosing the top running back, wide receiver, quarterback, even which defense is right for your team on any given week, you know where to turn. But when you're trying to decide on the right credit card for your wallet, the right mortgage lender for your dream home, or the right savings account, where do you go? The nerds at NerdWallet are here to help you make a smart financial decision. NerdWallet is a personal finance site run by money nerds. Think people as obsessed about personal finance as we are about fantasy sports. And we want to share their knowledge with our listeners to help them find the right financial products for them. All right, let's say you're looking for a new rewards credit card. NerdWallet can help compare cash back cards side by side, and that way you can feel confident choosing the one that suits your spending. Think of them like your weekly wide receiver PPR rankings, but you're comparing top credit cards that work for you. So are you ready to make a financial decision? Compare and find top credit card savings accounts and more at NerdWallet.com. NerdWallet, the smartest decision for all your financial decisions. NerdWallet Compare Inc. NMLS 1617539. NerdWallet is not an investment advisor nor an investment broker. Information is for educational purposes only. All right, our favorite team names are brought to you by NerdWallet. Or on the fence over which credit card you want to get, with NerdWallet side-by-side comparisons of top credit cards, you don't have to be. NerdWallet, the smartest decision for all your financial decisions. All right. Here are some of the best team names that came from
already.
DJ Gallo's article.
So good.
We're going to run through a few of these. All right. Dak to the Future. Don't mind that one.
Not bad.
Hit Me With Your Prescott.
I love it.
That's a good one.
We're the 80s.
Fire away. I'll never do that again.
Stafford Infection. I don't love that. I don't like that one as much.
You know why? Because it's just a little too close to
that one flies too close to the sun there with his elbow right now.
And besides, if you're labeling your team with an injury name, what are you really expecting from them all
that's,
year?
That's a great question. Coming your way, huh?
What about Natural Born Kylers? How do you feel about that?
It's pretty funny.
Natural Born Kylers? That's a movie field from back in the day.
I know that one.
Tell Me Where It Hurts, I feel like, is an old standby that we always got to have.
I feel like that's a spin on, you know.
Don't you feel like when Zach Ertz decides to retire, whenever that time comes after a great career, we're going to lose so many names from Zach Ertz over the years.
I love it. Yeah.
It's a good sport.
Yeah, Zach Ertz is a bad mother tucker, I'll tell you what. That's another one that you could do.
That, by the way, no, that tells you, though, I'm assuming that that's named after Justin Tucker.
Justin Tucker.
Yeah. And that tells you just how sweet Justin Tucker
as a
kicker.
Right.
I've got a lot of questions that I'd like to pose about Justin Tucker and a conversation probably that's not fit entirely for this podcast. But if the Ravens had used a first round pick on Justin Tucker when he entered the league and he was undrafted, so they didn't.
Sure.
But if they had, could you make a case that it was a steal as opposed to like you used a first round pick on a kicker? Just go back and look at the value he's added to this franchise over the course of his career. Yeah. And I think there's a chance that if they had used a first round pick on him,
it would have actually been a totally worthwhile
investment. I'm sure someone's going to get pissed at me for saying that, but
I'm not.
He's awesome.
I'm going to say this, and this has nothing to do with the names. Lions used a second round pick on Jason Hansen. Now, mind you, it was like back in the 40s when Jason Hansen played football. But he was a kick. He was one of the best kickers in the league for 20 plus years. You're telling me that Justin Tucker, who was able to help you be able to win football games, like, yes, it's totally worth it. Totally worth it. Totally I don't care what everyone else says, Field.
And I don't recall what
he sings opera.
He's awesome.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, we got another one here. 50 Shades of Trey. How do you feel about that one?
I love that one.
I'm assuming they're paying homage to Trey Sermon there.
Yo!
Stop it. Stop, Field. That's just, come on now.
Thanks.
Right, although, you know what makes me nervous about that name? Is like, if you had, that could be like, which Trey do you get today? Ooh. And seeing as we've already talked about a little of the inconsistency in camp, I'm a little worried about it.
I was going to say, Stefania, you showed so much restraint on the show yesterday. I was expecting you to come on here and be like, yeah, I think Trey Lance, easy top three quarterback. I was like, Stefania?
Come on now. I'm biased, but I'm not that biased.
We got a couple from our YouTube chat here. Sports Beast has Hooked on a Thielen, another one that I think is a good old standby with Adam Thielen.
More than Thielen.
Joe has The Dak Knight Rises or The Dak Knight Returns.
Ooh, that's pretty good.
Batman theme.
I haven't heard that one. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And with Dak coming back, you know, that's like a little bit of a return.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Mm. You know?
Okay. Return to the Dak. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that.
Do you use the same name for your team in every league or no?
Yeah, I do. Mine is Matthew Berry Sets My Lineup.
That explains your...
Okay, that's the funniest name.
That explains your record over the years.
Hey, oh, come on now! Well,
if the shoe fits.
He still downs. He doesn't listen. So he won't even hear that.
Stop it. That's so good. Yeah, I do use the same team name, though. I really do.
Okay.
Do you? I named my team name after you guys. I go into... We have mock drafts here at ESPN. One of my favorite things to do is when we go into these mock drafts that we have as a group. Like, I'll just name my team name. It's supposed to just say Team Dot, but I'll just name it Field Yates. Or Mike Clay. And Mike Clay and Field Yates are also in those drafts. So then like everyone's like, what's going on here? What is happening? I love naming my team names after my coworkers. It's
extremely annoying. I do have one league where I had to keep a league and I have Dalvin Cook. I'm let Dalvin Cook in that one. Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise Yater's gonna eat. Yeah.
Well, mine is day to day.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's not bad. Heck yeah. All right, that's gonna do it for us today. We are coming back next week and we have a whole bunch of stuff.
We're done?
You know what? We've got name games.
Wow.
I forgot we had name games.
Daniel's trying to get rid of us. I know it's Friday. Daniel wants to get going.
Unbelievable.
The work ethic on this one.
I'm sorry. Oh, it's one page. All right. Okay. I'm sorry about that. Let's do a couple of name games based on the players that we talked about today.
Okay.
Cam Akers. We talked about where we like him right now. Mike has him, wide receiver 14. Fields, you have him running back 14. You have him at running back 14. ESPN has him at 15. ADP is at 16. Mm-hmm. Would you take Cam Akers or Nick Chubb?
Yeah, I'm going with Nick Chubb here. And a couple of things to keep an eye on would just be if Deshaun Watson's suspension is prolonged, it's currently 6 games. I don't want to dive too deep into that. But if he's playing, this Browns offense will be much better and they'll have many more opportunities for touchdowns.
Yep.
And that would, if he's not playing at all this year, I might move Nick Chubb down a couple of spots, but I've got Chubb at 13, Akers at 14.
Is this fine?
Yeah, Nick Chubb over Akers.
Okay, what about Saquon Barkley?
I've got Cam Akers over Saquon Barkley. I expressed some of my concerns on Saquon in a previous show, but efficiency is not going to be has not been a huge strength of his in recent years. I hope the passing game is a big part of it, but worth noting, the Giants have already had 2 offensive linemen that could have at least figured into their depth that are now out for the year. In the case of Matt Gano, he's going to have to retire. So certainly best wishes to him and his future endeavors wherever life takes him after football. Shane Lemieux, a potential starter, left the game for them last night, did not return because of a toe injury. So the offensive line injuries are already mounting for this Giants team that we know has not been good along the offensive line for quite some time.
I do think, though, with an improved Saquon and more utilization in the passing game, there's also very little no depth behind him. The question for me, and I think I mentioned this yesterday, is utilization as we get in the back half of the season. Is it going to be too much? But he looks so incredibly different now. And after talking with him, like he's where guys are when they're a year removed from ACLs. I think the opportunity for him, and he's been good after the catch when he's been healthy. And I think you're just going to see a different guy.
Yeah.
And I would go with Saquon, especially because we talk about opportunity. I think he'll have more than Cam Akers.
Interesting. All right. How about David Montgomery or Cam Akers? I'm going to start with you, Stefania.
Cam Akers.
I've got Cam Akers ahead of David Montgomery. It's close, 14 versus 16 in my rankings. Just a little more touchdown upside. And the concern, if there is one for David Montgomery, is that while he has been an absolute workhorse over the past couple of seasons, new staff, are we totally certain that their new offensive coordinator will use him the same way that Matt Nagy did in previous years? That being Luke Getsy, who came over from the Packers, or could we see some more of Tristan Ebner, a sixth round pick this year, or Khalil Herbert, who was a good player for them last season.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about Allen Robinson and do a little name game with him. Mike has him at wide receiver 32. Field, you're at wide receiver 35. ESPN consensus is 33. Would you rather have Allen Robinson or the aforementioned Tyler Lockett?
Aforementioned. I like that word. Tyler Lockett, both Mike and I have him a little bit ahead of Allen Robinson. One thing to note, and I'm not trying to speak out of both sides of my mouth, is that when you're drafting wide receivers that are outside of our top 20 and even top 25, some of it may be like what you already have up to that point, right? If you have Keenan Allen, who you know is going to have
money in the bank,
100 catches over the course of the season, you got him and, you know, another wide receiver that goes 15 to 20 or whatever, that you're like, I know the volume is there. It's the touchdowns that you're concerned with. You might be able to roll the dice on a Tyler Lockett. Whereas, you know, if you think that Allen Robinson has a steadier floor each week, based off of what you did earlier in the round, that could change things as well. But I've got Lockett a little bit ahead of Allen Robinson. That one could change by the time we get closer to the year.
I'd go Robinson over Lockett.
Yeah.
I'm going to take that quarterback and that offense and Allen Robinson.
We'll see how it works out. All right, what about Allen Robinson or Adam Thielen, Stefania?
It's close for me. That's super close. Like, they're right next to each other in my book. So I can understand you got the relationship with Thielen and Cousins down now. But so I might lean towards Thielen, but it's very close.
Very close. Field?
Stefania's book looks like my rankings, as they are right next to each other as well. Robinson 35, Thielen 36. So Robinson gets the narrowest of edges. Adam Thielen, really, really good player, but like Allen Robinson, showed some signs in recent years. And of course, both of them have an alpha right next to them in Cooper Kupp and Justin Jefferson.
Absolutely. Allen Robinson or Drake London?
I've got Drake London at 30. I've got Allen Robinson at 35. So I go with Drake London. There's a chance he's a target funnel.
Yeah.
He can have 140 targets this year. It's just,
that's another one where I just don't know how, like, how's that offense going to look with that quarterback and what's going to happen?
But and their prodigy player last year, Kyle Pitts, found the end zone once. Right. Obviously, that was unlikely to sustain but I go London with a slight edge over Allen Robinson.
Me too. I think because of the volume. All right, Allen Robinson or Rashad Bateman taking over as the number one in Baltimore?
I've got Allen Robinson.
Yeah, Robinson.
35, Rashad Bateman 38. But I do like Rashad Bateman too. Good player, obviously. These are all close. These are name games for a reason, right? Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what, when I'm looking at a lot of these, and I do this in drafts, when I'm trying to make a decision between a lot of these people, a lot of it is the offense, the quarterback.
Right.
You know, they're so close to each other where it's like, which one do I feel like I like more from that standpoint? To that point, let's talk about DK Metcalf again. DK Metcalf, Field, you've got him at 20. Mike has him at 22. Mm-hmm. ESPN consensus is at 18. Would you rather have
DK? I'll come down a few pegs for me.
Or Terry McLaurin with Carson Wentz.
Yeah, Terry McLaurin as well here. You know, Carson Wentz is not exactly an all-pro.
Apparently, he has not looked good here in this offseason in training camp either.
I'm trying to sort of tap the brakes on a lot of what I'm seeing in training camp, only because there's been so many instances where something that looks a certain way during training camp looks the exact opposite 5 minutes into the regular season. So
that's fair. We have seen
Carson Wentz has never been a sniper with accuracy, but he's also accurate enough that I think that he'll be.
McLaurin's really, really good.
Yeah, Terry McLaurin's awesome. And so I give him the edge over DK.
Okay. Would you rather have DK Metcalf or boom or bust last year, Mike Williams?
Yeah, I want to be consistent here. As I mentioned how, like, you know, would you rather DK Metcalf with Drew Lock / Geno Smith or Mike Williams or Justin Herbert? And I said Mike Williams. So Mike Williams there. This would be adjusted in my rankings. I have also expressed my concerns, though, over Mike Williams.
Sure. Stefania?
Yeah, I'm going Mike Williams.
All right. What about DK Metcalf or Brandon Cooks in that Houston offense? All he does is get 1,000-yard season, excuse me.
Yeah. Brandon Cooks, the perpetually underrated, and he's done it with great quarterbacks. I mean, he started off with Drew Brees and Tom Brady and then Jared Goff when Jared Goff was still playing really, really good football. And I think Jared Goff is, you know, he's solid. He's not Tom Brady or Drew Brees, but he's really solid. And since then, he's playing with Deshaun Watson in Houston and now most recently Davis Mills, who I'm a believer in. So give me Brandon Cooks here.
I agree.
And I think Nico Collins is going to make it interesting because they're going to have to focus on him a lot more too. So
heck yeah.
Brandon Cooks.
All right. Now I think we've officially run through all of our stuff for the show.
Well, a couple of things. If you're still listening or still watching, we have a Spaces today at 1 p.m. If you're on the Twitter and if you're listening to this or if you're watching it live so you can actually hear this before 1 p.m., Myself, Stefania, Daniel, Eric Moody, Liz Loza will join us as well on Spaces, which is a Twitter functionality. If you do not know what Spaces already are, Monday, we Next start week. The Fantasy Marathon. Yeah. We cannot Woo. Wait. Monday night, 7 p.m. Eastern time. What will be a two-hour kickoff edition of Fantasy Football Now. All these people, plus Mike Clay and many, many more, will be a part of our 28-hour event that kicks off 7 p.m. Eastern time.
And normally, we end up not doing Focus on at least one of those days just because the schedule is so crazy. But guess what?
We're doing it.
This year, we're doing it every single day. We're doing
every day.
Fantasy Marathon special. We are doing it every day. So we will be here with you for Focus all week next week. I'm excited.
Cannot wait. Looking forward to it. And a big week for the Fantasy Marathon, obviously. If you can have a chance to invite one person to make them play for, encourage them to play fantasy for the first time in their life.
I like making them play.
Do it. Great to have everybody around. Great to have Stefania back. Great to be with you guys as always.
Heck yeah.
Looking forward to Monday already. Enjoy the weekend.
We're going to do this next week. We love you guys. And we'll see you on Monday.
Bunch of fantasy preseason games tonight. So let's keep an eye
Go
out
Niners.
On plenty
Trey Lance.
Of storylines.
We'll
Lance's
play.
Debut. We'll watch it. Okay. I think I'll watch it.
We'll probably watch it.
Yeah, we'll watch it.
Okay. Cool.
All right. We'll see you guys. You know, my biggest regret is that I'll probably never be able to watch me do this
Stop
show
it,
live.
Stop.
I think I'm realizing, like, I did such a good job today if I could have just watched it live.
God.
If you need a stick of Tide, Field is your guide. If you're in Bristol or in Farmington, you should find another ride. Candidly, he hates Mike Clay, and you know that it's a fact. Every Yater's gonna Yate, 'cause he's on TV every day. A spicy tomato who's got the stats and tweets that'll make you laugh. He's our favorite host, and everybody knows his name. He's Field.